COVID-19 has affected us all differently. Some are sick, but others are symptomless. Some are working from home, but others are unemployed. Some are sheltering in place, but others are living in shelters. However, there's one thing about this pandemic that affects us all, and that is stress. Whether it rains into your daily life one drop at a time like a leaky faucet or crashes through it like a rogue wave, COVID stress, in some form or another, has figured out how to be everywhere at once. The last 6 months have thrown everything into flux for just about everybody. Personally, professionally, economically, emotionally, spiritually, and pretty much every other word you can name that ends in L-Y. It's a lot to cope with. The human spirit usually does a pretty good job of meeting and mastering these quagmires, and then adjusting accordingly. But this pandemic sets a new bar, one that, honestly, we're not sure how to get over. But we're trying, and we're trying really, really hard. Today on Rising to the Challenge, COVID stress, what it looks like, what we can do about it, and how we can all stay sane. No guarantees.
The mystery virus started here in the city of Wuhan. Chinese authorities pinpointing its source to this food market. Those infected are being treated in medical centers, suffering symptoms similar to pneumonia.
We're deeply concerned both by the alarming levels of spread and severity and by the alarming levels of inaction. We have therefore made the assessment that COVID-19 can be characterized as a pandemic.
I think Americans should be prepared that they're going to have to hunker down significantly more than we as a country are doing.
Right now, we turn to alarming numbers in the coronavirus pandemic. Those numbers have set records.
The rising number of cases and hospitalizations in many areas are still mounting.
Coronavirus cases continue to climb. Separately, the CDC says it's possible that the number of infections in the U.S. could be 10 times higher than the confirmed case count.
The governor has been preaching the importance of mask usage for months, but that message is gaining urgency as the number of cases across the state continues to rise because of what was described today as people's complacency.
This is a make or break moment for Illinois.
The University of Illinois Chicago Emergency Room is located in the heart of the Illinois Medical District, a tangle of major hospital systems just west of the beating heart of downtown Chicago. And connecting the city to the medical district, like a series of branching arteries, are the elevated trains, or Ls. One line runs right next to the UIC Emergency Room, and I mean right next to it. So close, you can hear it outside the building, inside the ER, and in every office adjacent to it. It is a constant.
Are we to go, please? Are we to go, Andrea?
The UIC ER has a lot going on in a very small space. It's a 29-bed facility with spots for another 9 patients in the hall, if needed. Even on a not-so-busy day, it looks like controlled chaos. Medical supplies jammed into every spare square foot, people in scrubs speed-walking around each other in an ER do-si-do, computers beeping everywhere. It's not for the faint of heart, but it's a good place to get one treated.
Less of an issue, but if you have more of your cardiac patients, they tend to go there, none over here. 19 is our.
When COVID rolled through this place like the relentless L, one of its passengers was stress for the patients, for the families, and for the docs who were supposed to take care of everyone without protocols, provide answers without data, and soothe patients who couldn't see their families.
Of course, everything's been kind of converted. There's plexiglass everywhere to try to limit exposure, because that was a big concern before. We have
Janet Lynn is an attending physician in the Department of Emergency Medicine at the University of Illinois, Chicago. This MD also happens to have an MPH and an MBA. It would be easy to hear that long list of acronyms and think, superhuman, which is exactly what she doesn't want anyone to think when they see the white coat, especially in the days of COVID. She spoke through a mask, of course.
People like to think about physicians or hospitals as, you know, an edifice, a location for care. But as physicians, we are also humans. And so we also have the same emotions, same thought process, same doubts, and same unknowns as every other person. So all these emotions that have been expressed have been displayed amongst all of our providers.
Case in point, an ER doc whose story deeply affected Dr. Lynn.
One of our physicians, our ED physicians from New York, who, you know, one, cared for people day in, day out, felt this obligation to have a system in place. She herself got COVID, was hospitalized and sick, had no prior mental health illness or diagnosis, but, you know, people could actually see signs and symptoms and where she was removed, you know, from care, went home, but ultimately actually committed suicide. And so it's actually very real. It affects us. It's the same as other people.
Except that other people don't have the added burden of having to save people's lives with their hands tied behind their backs. While we know a bit more now than we did 6 months ago, doctors at the time were faced with a new disease, inadequate information, overtapped resources, dying patients, and a good chance of getting sick themselves. This in a group of people who are used to split-second decision-making, stabilizing patients quickly, and helping people at a terrible time. Every system vital to their work was upended.
This is something real that we need to pay attention to our own wellness, that our obligation to care also includes ourselves.
Recognizing the stress the ER docs were under, the hospital started making changes, small changes that made a big difference.
One of the things that we did in the hospital is identifying what we call respite locations. The room was darkened, you had creature comforts for even a physician that was there overnight on call could actually just escape to. It's a quiet area. You had something as simple as having coffee. Available where you didn't have to search for it, or comfortable couches, or a place to lay down, a place to sleep, a place where you didn't have to talk, having music accessible, providing small things, a meal. Even a simple thank you really, I think, helps. Acknowledging, hey, you know, recognizing the work that people are doing and the amount of work that people are doing.
And that wasn't the only change the hospital made.
We established hotlines, emotional support lines, for people just to even voice kind of what they were going through. Sometimes, you know, what people see, they internalize and they don't have an ability to be able to share what they're feeling so that it kind of wells up in them and kind of builds. And that, I think, also perpetuates either an inadequacy, a self-doubt, especially when you're seeing lots of people die and there was nothing that you could do. That wears on people's minds, their souls. And so really addressing that was extremely important.
With all the efforts the hospital has made to alleviate the stress in the ER, they're hoping that forewarned really is forearmed. Everything they've learned, the hard way, now becomes ammunition for the next COVID wave they expect this fall and winter. Like the constant thrum of the train, it's hard for ER doc Janet Lynn to forget about that wave, even if she tried.
Even now, I think all of us are somewhat wary to see if there's going to be a next surge. And then thinking about our preparedness and, you know, it's very easy to get lulled into, hey, this is now back to normal, but it really isn't. And so that is also another level of, I wouldn't say anxiety, but, you know, something that enters into my brain on a fairly regular basis.
check on this right now.
Janet Lynn is an attending physician in the Department of Emergency Medicine at the University of Illinois, Chicago. Although stress due to COVID can be felt acutely in the medical community, they're not alone. We all feel it. But what is it? How does it manifest? When should we get help? To get a better picture of COVID stress and how it may differ from all the other kinds of stress we're prone to, we spoke with Tara Powell, associate professor at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign School of Social Work. She studies the stress related to post-disaster mental and behavioral health. Mostly, she studies the after-effect of natural disasters like floods, fires, and earthquakes, and complex emergencies like war. She says COVID qualifies as the latter.
One of the interesting things that I'm seeing is these stress reactions really overlap with a lot of stress reactions that I've seen in previous disasters I've worked in. For example, insomnia, having vivid dreams, and that's really our mind and our bodies just trying to make sense of the uncertainty and questions we may have. And so when we're having these vivid dreams, forgetfulness. So that's a very common stress reaction, and that's really one of our cognitive adaptations to stress. So saying you're going to do one thing and then forgetting and thinking, say, for example, losing your keys or getting in your car and realizing you forgot something. And those are just really, anytime we're stressed, those are very, very common reactions.
Natural disasters, Powell points out, are one-time events. And as traumatic as they are, people can move quickly toward cleaning up and rebuilding. Complex emergencies, like COVID, are extended over time, and the stress we feel becomes more elongated and chronic, which is often exacerbated by our tendency towards stoicism and suffering in silence.
I think we were raised to be that way. I think other cultures were too, but definitely within the U.S. We're like, okay, I have to be the best. I have to be very independent. I have to be unique. And so you become harder on yourself. A lot of times when we're in extreme stress, we actually become meaner to ourselves. And we're more likely to say, well, wait, no, you're supposed to be strong. Even though you wouldn't tell, you know, a good friend that. You wouldn't say, well, you're supposed to be strong, so you shouldn't have these feelings. But we do it to ourselves all the time.
And then, Powell says, after being so hard on ourselves, ironically, we wonder why we feel so bad.
You know, one of the biggest pieces to being able to manage your stress is recognizing your stress symptoms and recognizing when you are stressed. Some people might think that they're managing okay, but then all of a sudden there's a breakdown. It could be an emotional breakdown. It can be a physical breakdown. And our bodies tell us when we're stressed.
Our bodies can have a lot to say, in some cases, very loudly. And our job is to listen.
If you're constantly feeling on edge the majority of the day, that's a sign. You know, insomnia is common during this time, but if it's every night and you can't sleep at all, that's another sign. If you are feeling symptoms of a panic attack, So say tightness in your chest, shortness of breath, feeling disconnected with the environment around you. Then also, you know, more severely, if you're having thoughts of self-harm, or if you're feeling so down that it's really, you can't get out of bed each morning, that's another sign as well. And so, you know, there are lots of ways that we can identify, okay, well, maybe it's time for me to reach out and have somebody to talk to.
And once you hear your body shouting enough, it's time for self-care, but not the overused, watered-down, glossy magazine version.
Self-care doesn't mean, you know, just taking a bubble bath or, you know, going to get a massage. It's much deeper than that. Self-care also involves self-compassion as well. And how can I give myself a break while still getting the things that I need to get done? Even doing like a 3-minute grounding exercise, so mindfulness, taking a few deep breaths and bringing yourself back to the present, or even, you know, taking a step outside, collecting your thoughts and bringing yourself back to the present can also be very helpful.
And here's an unexpected plus. There is the possibility that these elongated periods of stress can make us stronger. It's called post-traumatic growth.
With post-traumatic growth, often we are better able to handle adversity. People become more optimistic. They become closer with their values and beliefs. There's a construct, and they call it spirituality, but that's really just your values and beliefs. They become closer also with family members and those they care about. And so those are all things that post-traumatic growth can lead to.
Tara Powell is an associate professor at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign School of Social Work. Last March, teachers all over the country had to start teaching online, many of whom had never done so before. Faced with new technology, new procedures, and a new way of relating to students, it was stressful for everyone. Well, almost everyone. Where others panicked, this guy ate it up. Mark Walters talks like a tornado spins at breakneck speed. Having a conversation with him feels like you're trying to hop on a train that's already running. And I mean that in the best possible way. He loves to talk. And one thing he loves to talk about is travel.
Hey there, fellow travelers, to Scotland. Mark here with Walters World, and today we're here in Edinburgh. And today, what I'm going to do. Hey there, fellow travelers, Mark here with Walters World, and today we're here in the Iguazu National Park with the Iguazu Waterfalls. I mean, the awesome waterfalls you see in. Hey there, fellow travelers, Mark here with Walters World, and today we're in Mystic, Connecticut, in a beautiful place here in the U.S.
These are from Mark Walters' travel videos. He has 2,000 of them on YouTube. He's traveled a lot.
Canada, U.S., Mexico, Nicaragua, Guatemala, Belize, Nicaragua, El Salvador, Costa Rica, Peru, Ecuador, Brazil, Argentina, Uruguay, China, Japan.
And Walters Rwanda, is a very popular guy. He has 700,000 followers. And that's just his travel canon. There's also his business collection.
Fellow marketers, Professor Walters here, and today we're going to talk about what is marketing. And for me, when I think what marketing. Hey there, fellow marketers, Professor Walters here, and today we're going to talk about is the supply chain, and we're going to just start with the basics.
And then there are videos that combine his two loves, travel and business.
Hey there, fellow marketers, Professor Walters here, and today we're in Paris, and today we're going to talk about is the total product that companies sell. Because hey there, marketing learners, we're back, and this time we're on the Outer Banks of North Carolina, actually Kitty Hawk, where the Wright brothers flew for the first time. It's just right down the street there, and it got me thinking, how do the Wright brothers know the right place to fly? The thing is,
that But as popular as he is on YouTube, he's even more popular in his classroom at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign Geese College of Business, where he's an associate professor of marketing. In fact, his most popular search tags on a well-worn anonymous teacher rating site are hilarious, inspirational, respected, and amazing lectures. So when COVID hit campus last March and the university went online, Walters combined all his loves into one crazy caper, not just for students, but also to raise money for the Dean's Fund. He decided to teach one of his entire courses in one day, one very long day. Most teachers may find this a tad stressful. Walters isn't most teachers.
All right, now I can actually get started with this. So, welcome, and I'm going to kind of run this kind of like how I run my classes, so it'll be a lot more free-flowing, a lot more fun, stuff like that. Like,
that was 2 minutes in. This was 5 hours in.
But remember, 9 o'clock, because it's a school night, okay? So we have that. Anyway.
And this was 11 hours in.
Now, next thing I want to talk about is packaging. So you have different kinds of packaging. You have primary packaging, and you have secondary packaging. So
you'll notice he hasn't slowed down one bit.
It was a good thing that I kept talking the entire time, because it was like I finished the 15 hours and 40 minutes, you know, signed off, and within 10 minutes my voice was gone. But it took me about 3 days before I could talk normal again.
By which he means a mile a minute. This was a feat of planning, organization, grit, guts, and endurance.
So I talked to my buddy, a friend of mine is also my chiropractor, and I told him what I'm going to do. And he was like, okay, you know, do some stretches beforehand. Make sure you take an occasional break. And he's like, and don't stand up the whole time. It's like, get yourself a higher, like a stool, so you can kind of like lean on that a bit, because that'll take off a lot of pressure on your back. And what's funny, well, it's not really funny, but one thing that's kind of funny is when we first went on quarantine, I started riding my bike around the neighborhood with my son, my oldest son, and I had bruised my tailbone. So I couldn't even stand up the week before this was, you know, because we had planned it, and then this happened, and I'm like, oh man, this is gonna hurt. The few times I had my wife come on when I go to the restroom or something like that, I would go to the restroom, and then I'd go lay down and do the back stretches.
Hi, kids. How you doing? For proposal analysis and vendor negotiation and selection. I don't know anything about any of that.
Then how did this idea of teaching an entire course in one day come to you or come about?
Well, I was trying to figure out how to help out students, and you know, and I knew there was the Emergency Dean's Fund, you know, and so it's for students that need, you know, let's say they got a crazy boyfriend and they gotta, you know, they need to change their locks, or you know, there's a fire or someone passed away and they gotta get home and they don't have the money. And I'm like, these are students that really need help. If you were watching on YouTube, there was a link in the video, and then there was a link in the description you can go and click on. And so people would go, they click on the link and they go direct to the university and they would donate money straight to the fund. And those that are listening to this podcast, you too can go to the Emergency Dean Fund at the University of Illinois and help out students in need.
And how much money did you raise?
We raised a few thousand. So that was nice that we got. I mean, I think over the end it was 2,000 or 3,000. I got so many really nice emails from students, and actually some students that actually have received money from that fund, how much it meant to them. And those emails made it so worthwhile. I'm like, I'd do it again just to help them out.
Just curious, when your parents went to parent-teacher conferences, were the comments always like, Walters is a great kid, great leader, great this, great that. I wish he would talk a little less.
There was a bit of that too much talking. That is true. I may have had a detention or two in high school for talking too much. I cannot lie about that one.
When do you think this might happen again? And if it does happen again, are you going to start jogging or something?
I actually have started exercising. I hear it's an important thing.
I'm strictly talking endurance.
Oh, endurance. Oh, yes. Exactly. Yes. Yes, I will be doing that. I am actually swimming laps now and walking the dog twice a day to get back up there. But we should be good to go. Once you have one of the students that pops on there and says, this helped me out, you're like, it gives you energy for hours, knowing that you're helping people. When you see the people or the people that have helped, they're like, this does make a difference. You're like, I mean, it just, I'm smiling right now, getting goosebumps thinking about it.
Marathon teacher, traveler, vlogger, bundle of infectious energy, effervescent talker, and teaching associate professor of business administration at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign Geese College of Business, Mark Walters.
We put out honest travel videos from places that we go to all the time to help other honest and awesome fellow travelers like yourself whenever you travel too. So I hope that really made sense, because I'm just really enjoying myself here. It's just so wonderful. Anyway, bye from the Serengeti. It is an amazing place. I highly recommend it. So I'll say tschüss, or a little bit more formal, auf Wiedersehen from Munich. Bye. And we really appreciate your likes, subscriptions, and we hope you have a great time here in Nicaragua. We know you will, because it is a great surprise place to check out. Adios de Nicaragua.
Mariana Delgado is no stranger to stress. In fact, I would say she invites it, welcomes it, even runs toward it full throttle, which is why this senior at the University of Illinois Chicago joined the National Guard and started working as an emergency medical technician before she even got her diploma and headed toward graduate school to become a physician assistant. But I'll let her tell you more about that.
I do really like the adrenaline, and I'm a very fast-paced worker, like bam, 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 do this, do that. I enjoy that kind of environment since I was younger, and then I think the Army as well has kind of taught me that. So as soon as the pandemic kicked off at the beginning of this year and all classes went online, I jumped right into a full-time position. I decided to just work Monday through Friday, pretty much 40 or more hours, long days in the ambulance with lots and lots of COVID patients at the beginning. At the beginning, I think just because of the uncertainty all around the world, nobody really knew how it could be transmitted, what you needed to wear as far as like personal protective equipment. So at the beginning, I was a little nervous, just a new, completely new virus brought into this world. And I didn't really know what to expect. But after many calls, many experiences working alongside my coworkers, just discussing different ideas as to what we should be doing and wearing, the proper procedures, up to today, I do feel very confident and I don't really become too nervous around COVID. I really have a passion for trying to provide like service to my community, and especially during the pandemic, I just felt like a calling to go out and try and help those as much as possible. My parents have always taught me to go above and beyond and do the best that you can, all while helping others. I was always taught that. I always put people first before myself. It was really sad to see just younger people that were impacted by this virus and the toll that it had on them. And then when I get home, I see their family members with a look of concern and worry. And that was just very detrimental at times. It was hard to see that. So my station in Chicago pertains to the south side of Chicago. So I tend to see a lot of like the lower income minority groups being impacted by this virus. At the end of the day, we all are just trying to make a difference in helping each other and our patients. So I think that is the most rewarding part, is being able to provide service to maybe like lower income groups, and just the impact that it has on them when we drop them off at home and they're just extremely happy that we got them there safely. They're able to be back in their own beds without being surrounded by hospital staff 24/7. A lot of people have been really thankful for that. So it makes me feel really good on the inside to see that.
That was Mariana Delgado, senior at the University of Illinois Chicago, EMT, and member of the National Guard. Rising to the Challenge was produced and engineered by Libby Foster, with editing help from Shayna Roth. Special thanks to Tim Colleen, Moss Bresnahan, Lily Duncanson, Laura Clower, Robin Kaler, Kirsten Ruby, David Mercer, and Tom Hardy. Rising to the Challenge is a production of the University of Illinois System and Illinois Public Media. I'm Gwen Maxey. Thanks for listening.